Fed Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia's students and Georgia's schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Craig Gears with Fed Talks, and we are continuing our conversation today about the Title II program. So once again, joining me in the room, I have
John White with Federal Programs.
Sean Owen with Federal Programs.
And our guest this time is Carly Ambler. Carly?
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no, it was a good conversation we had during the first episode, and we're looking forward to continuing it right now. So Sean, you want to pick it up?
So I'll get us started here. Can you please remind the audience, what's the purpose of Title II, and what are some of the things commonly funded with Title II funds?
Now, Title II is about supporting effective instruction, and so we do that for teachers, for leaders, and in the case of private schools, other school leaders, and those are people who manage instruction and operations at the school on a day-to-day basis. And what we pay for is their continuing education, professional learning. We also pay for recruitment and retention. We recognize that there are some hard-to-fill areas, so they can do some strategic spending in order to try and get really high quality candidates in and keep those high quality teachers and leaders that they already have in place.
So that's interesting. So even I would think in rural Georgia, where sometimes it's difficult to find certain content area teachers, this grant could really...
Absolutely. Yeah. We have some districts who, over the years have really refined their recruitment processes, and they travel to specific universities across the country in order to find candidates, teaching candidates in the areas that are hard to staff. So it really gives them a little extra that you can't get just by advertising on a website or in a magazine.
That's great. So I have a question about how the money is spent here in Georgia and the roles of the different people. So Congress gives money to the state. We've identified that in other programs. Mm-hmm. So Congress gives money to the state, and the state does some things in the program and the school districts and the private schools. Can you help us understand the distinction between those three?
Absolutely. So at the state level, we do have the formula grant that was provided by Congress and the U.S. Department of Ed. And then at the state level, we look at our individual enrollment at a particular point in time to determine a per pupil piece. And that gives just a rough estimate for what's available. So we have the district gets a set allocation. But when we get down to the private school level, it's actually a lot more collaborative. In Georgia, we try to ensure that most of the money is directly going to teachers and leaders. So we have a suggested administrative cap. But what that administrative cap is determined in consultation between private schools and public schools. And what they start is they have the conversation about what needs to happen. What do kids need in order to serve those kids? What do those teachers and leaders need? What education, what recruitment or retention opportunities do we need to make sure that these kids are served? And once they figure out what they're doing, then they decide what their admin cap is, and then they decide a per pupil amount. So some of it is basic operations, like how do you pay for it? How much time does it take to negotiate a contract? Stuff like that would help you determine administrative cost.
So Carly, I don't think we've ever really addressed this when does all this happen in the cycle of things? What time of year is all this happening?
Well, and that's actually built right into the statute. So it should start to happen before money's ever given to the state for the districts and the private schools. So it comes out in usually about October is the time that we recommend, and that's in the previous year. So it gives them several months to kind of get up to speed. And it's interesting because this grant comes out pretty much every year. So the school districts and the private schools will talk about how everything's going in the current year mm-hmm. at the same time that they're planning for the next year.
That's so, the fall, you said.
Right, absolutely. So, for example, this year in fall of 2018, they'll be planning for next year, 2019's implementation, 2019 mm-hmm. to 2020. At the same time that they're talking about how everything's going right this second. So if they decide that the best thing is to bring in a speaker and to do some job embedded coaching with teachers, they'll be able to talk right now about how that's working day to day in a school and say, well, what do we want to do next year? Do we want to keep it? Do we want to tweak it? You know, what do we want to do to make sure that teachers and leaders are supported to give the kids exactly what they need?
So how do schools know and get support to implement this? How do they know how to work with private schools? Is there training that's provided from the department? What's that all about?
Well, without trying to sound like I'm kissing up too much, Sean Owen is our ombudsman right here next to me, and she really does a phenomenal job of working across all our programs to pull together all the resources. She has some amazing contacts nationally with other states to see what practices are already in place, but also within the private schools to ensure that they know, one, that they can participate. That's a big deal, just letting people know that they have the opportunity. And then once they get in, you're right, we found that modeling some of those practices, and I think as a state we're moving in that direction to be able to say, these are things that help you with the conversation. These are things that we've learned, don't forget this. And, you know, these are the opportunities that you can look to.
So there's training that that's provided from the department related to private schools. And then also school districts, when they're just trying to use the funds locally, is there also training?
Well, you know, we really encourage a partnership, a collaborative partnership, where school districts can work closely with private school officials. And what we found is that a number of school districts have long, healthy relationships with private school representatives. And so they have a good foundation for a constant conversation about the cultures of the schools, the academic achievement of the schools, and what can be done as they continue to grow and evolve as a school. So I think that we have a lot of good structures in place, but those are the people we also draw from, those private school administrators and those public school administrators, to be able to tell us what's going well and where we can continue to refine our process.
Well, that was a great plug. I appreciate that. Also, can you just mention to us some of the resources, additional resources, and you've covered a lot of information already, but that are out there to help with equitable services?
Well, we have the Office of Non-Public Education that's available, kind of part of U.S. Department of Education, and they really focus on that specific area, and they have a lot of guidance that they put out and some webinars and different points of contact. We've also worked at the state level with attending different legal conferences in order to make sure that we're up to date on the latest guidance. That helps us to stay in touch with audits that are occurring across the country, guidance that's been recently developed, and problems in practice that we see across the country, so that in Georgia we can really refine our processes and make sure we're in a good place. There's also the National Association of ESEA State Program Administrators. It used to be the National Title I Group, but they recently rebranded, I believe it was in January or February of 2018, and they're a lot more inclusive, and they have some amazing resources that our school districts often reach out to, but they have a public website where people can get a little bit more information about what's going on. And then we do have a lot of support in Georgia in our private school organizations. They have a lot of great contacts and across the country and with other organizations to make sure we're also aware from just a different perspective of what's going on and what opportunities are out there.
How can parents and community members get involved in this work?
I think it's really critical that they make an attempt to get involved in this work, making sure that they join the needs assessment process. Our schools are a critical part of our communities. We know that real estate agents sell better, that businesses will establish in places where they can have a successful community. And our schools are a big part of that, and making sure our workforce is prepared, but also making sure it's a place we all want to live and be and go. So making sure that they're involved in the needs assessment process of what's happening in a school district, not just our grant, but from any perspective, is really absolutely critically important. And being a partner, not just giving your feedback, but actually getting in and seeing what you can do to contribute. Because we found that there's some partnerships, like in our grant, with professional learning, where you could work to make sure that those teachers have some neat experiences with continuing education if you get in there and you get in the weeds and you find out about it. I would say if if you support a private school, you also want to be aware of what's going on with them, what they're doing, and a lot of them do actively ask for that information, but make sure you know what's going on with them as well. And then just in general, just be aware of what's going on. We just ask people to be active citizens and know what's going on in our community and our state to make sure that we support what's happening. We all benefit.
Are there any areas or content areas in education which you couldn't use Title II funds for? I know that's kind of a loaded question, but...
I'm going to be honest, Craig.
Yes.
With the reauthorization of NCLB and to ESSA, or I'm sorry, ESEA to ESSA, mm-hmm. but the change from NCLB to ESSA, there are a lot of topics that changed. We know we got a lot of public attention mm-hmm. about really focusing on just literacy and math as a country. And we know that we need to make sure that every area is mm-hmm. touched and can benefit from continuing education. Mm-hmm. We also know that children are not just one-dimensional, so it's not just about student achievement. We know that climate is really critically important. We know that their communities are critically important. So with this reauthorization, Title II was largely overhauled to ensure that you could reach out to community partnerships and talk about how you can help get critical access to things for students, whether it's healthcare services or mental health services, or other types of identification. So there are a lot of topics we haven't historically been able to support. So it moves well outside of just content area stuff and into the child as a whole child. And making sure that they're supported completely. So we could send someone to continuing education for math, and we could send them for identifying signs of sexual abuse, but making sure that that child is totally supported. So we're just starting to see where districts are thinking innovatively uh-huh. about the opportunities that are out there.
And I know in a few of the programs we've talked about this part of ESSA that is supplement, not supplant. In other words, federal yeah. funds are used to add on additional things, not take the place of what's already going mm-hmm. or required. Is that the same for Title II?
It is the same for Title II. It largely depends on things that are required in the law, but right. a lot of professional learning is not required by law. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we fund, all of what we fund is supplemental because that's the law, but right. most professional learning we find is supplemental. Very few things are not, and that would be stuff like testing, professional development,
right. Mm-hmm.
right? You couldn't pay for something like that. But and if you paid for a huge initiative locally for a large number of years, and then you tried to switch it over to the grant, there might be some concerns because we want districts to sustain their current funding mm-hmm. And make sure that this is just that cherry on top.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it goes along with all the other yep. programs. And this is really meant to add on. It mm-hmm. is above
extend
and beyond what already exists in state and local funds.
Absolutely.
Good. Yeah. Now, do you also have the supplement, not supplant rule with other federal funds, or could your Title II funds be used?
Absolutely can support activities that have been supported under other federal programs.
Uh-huh.
For example, Title III,
uh-huh.
where they serve a lot of our EL students.
And EL means?
English language.
English learners,
right. So we've been able to support some of the professional development that sometimes has been traditionally supported through Title III.
Okay.
So those are pieces that we can pick up as some of the funding ebbs and flows, particularly for various districts.
Right. So that flexibility is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Helpful.
Yeah. We want districts to really closely look at their needs and coordinate their funds to make sure that they're using them strategically, really leveraging them uh-huh. for the best use.
And I know we're just about out of time for this, but I'm just curious. We've talked a lot about leaders and teachers, but can you also, if you have administrative support staff, like admin assistants, lunchroom workers, to what extent can Title II be used to help also support any learning that they may? I mean, we talked about the broad flexibility, and sometimes these staff people also,
also
interact with kids. Yeah, so I'm just curious.
I mean, those staff are critical members yeah. of the school. We know that they're an important part of the climate and the support. There are some learning opportunities. They tend to be very targeted and okay. limited. So it might be, some of the topics that they have listed explicitly in the law are making sure that there's privacy around student information, making sure that we don't share any information that should not be publicly available. Also making sure that, I mentioned sexual abuse earlier, making sure that all adults in a school building are able to identify signs so that we can intervene and make sure that students are well supported and protected. So topics like that.
All right, maybe perhaps family engagement topics too, with the critical importance of that front office staff and welcoming environments, no?
Not generally.
Okay.
It's not explicitly listed in law, but there are some, ESSA made it so that there is an opportunity at the state level to look at the evidence base that supports those opportunities and make an executive decision to incorporate them if we wish.
All right. Had to ask. I mean, it's good. That's what we're here to learn. So thanks for clarifying that. And we've wrapped up, I think, the second in the series. So we want to thank Carly for joining us, and we look forward to continuing the conversation in the next one. Thank you.
Thanks, Carly.
Thanks, Carly.